Session number 866.
Major General Richards, Rio 1. Do you come from a military background, General?
No. My father was farming in North Wales, and he also did some job in the civil service as well.
So you enlisted during the First World War, did you?
Well, the First World War came along, and I was at school then. And in 1915, I took the examination for Sandhurst and joined my company at Sandhurst in January 1916. And I did my time there, training there, until August 1916, when I was commissioned in the Royal Welsh Fusiliers.
Had you, up until then, had you planned an army career?
No, I hadn't planned an army career. I was really wanting to go to the Navy, but I tried once or twice to go at sea, see how it went, and I was terribly seasick, and so I decided that the sea was not for me. And so when the war came along, it was quite obvious that when I had to make the army one's career.
What were the sort of things you were involved in when you were out in Egypt with the Royal Welsh Fusiliers?
Well, I went to Royal Welsh Fusiliers, and after a little training at a place called Litherland outside Liverpool, we went to Egypt in a ship called, I've forgotten the name of the ship now. Anyway, we got to Egypt. First of all, went to Salonika and dropped a lot of troops there, and then we went on to Alexandretta, where we disembarked, and went to a camp called Mustafa, where we stayed for 3 or 4 days until we allotted our regiment. And I went with two other fellows to the Royal Welsh Fusiliers in the Citadel in Cairo, where they were doing garrison duties. And we stayed there until at least I stayed there until about January 1917, when I joined the Machine Gun Corps Motors and went to join a light car patrol at Sloom on the Western Desert.
How did that come about that you joined them?
Well, I had some friends in the Duke Westminster's armored cars, and they were stationed at Sloom on the Western Desert. And they were short of officer too, and so I asked them if they could arrange for me to be attached to them, and I was. That's how I got there.
What had you heard of them before? Had you heard anything about them?
The Duke Western Armed Cars? Oh yes, I'd heard about them because they rescued the Tara prisoners from a place called Bir Hakeim on the Western Desert, and it was quite an event in those days because the motor car was in its infancy, and it was a rescue which took place from Saloum across about 100 miles of desert, which was quite unmapped, and one had to rely upon native guides to get there, really. That's what it amounted to, really. It's very they had to rescue 97, I think it was, the Tara prisoners, so it meant a lot of transport to bring them back again. But that happened before I joined them.
But this built up some sort of image of them as a...
Oh yes, yes, definitely. And really, they were Rolls-Royce armoured cars, and I've been with armoured cars and tanks ever since.
Did they, when you heard about the vacancy, did they want mechanical experience at all?
No, that's right. So, no, I think most of the people in the armoured cars were jockeys or ex-cavalry, people like that. We had the Duke of Westminster's two jockeys there, Willie Griggs and Walter Griggs, and all kinds of people like that they were. The cavalry, as you know, were no use in France after 1915, and all the personnel were really cavalry people.
How did they get on in cars then? Did they?
Oh, got on very well, as far as I can know. Very well. Very few people had any mechanical knowledge whatsoever. The armored car, the Rolls-Royce armored car, was so reliable it didn't matter. And the Ford Model T model Fords were very simple to understand and so on, and they would go on the sniffer of oil rig, so everything worked very well.
Why though had you volunteered to sort of get involved in this?
Well, I volunteered to get some service, active service and so on. I was stuck in the citadel in Cairo and didn't look like getting very far, and I didn't fancy marching across the desert, but I much prefer to go by motor car.
When you joined them, what sort of training did you do with them to start with?
Well, I did very little training. I did a course at Zaytun in outside Cairo in the machine gun, the Vickers machine gun. But otherwise, I did no training. One picked up the training as you went along, like navigation and so on.
How many people were in an armored car?
Well, in my unit was a number two light car patrol. I suppose there were 25, something like that. Two officers and the others are other ranks, about 25 to 26 or so. You went out on these patrols.
And were you known as the Duke of Westminster's force? Were you, this name still stayed?
Oh, yes, yes, they were still there, yes. I suppose so. I don't know. I suppose they were. I just don't know. I have no idea who they were. But we were the armoured cars, the Rolls-Royce armoured cars themselves, we didn't use them very much for reconnoitering on the desert because of the petrol business, and they weren't as mobile as the Ford car, and so they were hardly ever used except to reinforce sometimes when we got into a bit of trouble.
What do you mean, you hardly ever used armored cars?
Well, hardly ever used armored cars because they were used for, shall I say, fighting if we encountered the enemy, and they weren't used to reconnoiter. We had to spend all our time reconnoitering, trying to prevent the Senussi smuggling arms into Egypt. It was our task. And then we would also try to prevent Senussi when they came back with goods, which would be sugar and tea and so on, and cutting them off, and that was our job, really, isolating them from bringing arms into Egypt.
And was it effective, the armored cars, for doing that job?
Oh, I think so, yes. Like car patrols we were. They were very effective, I think.
Did you yourself have engagements with
enemy? Oh, yes, yes. The engagement was very one-sided because once there were camel convoys and so on, probably 50 or 60 camels going across the desert, and they only had rifles, these people, and they hardly ever resisted when we encountered them. And we just had to judge whether they were too far away from our base, which was Saloum, to drive the camels into Saloum, or to shoot them on the spot and take the Arabs, the Senussi, as prisoners back to Saloum.
Did the presence of armoured cars frighten these people?
Oh, I think so, yes. Oh, yes. They've never seen anything. I don't suppose they'd ever seen a motor car before. Very few of them anywhere. We went to Siwa, an oasis 200 miles south of Saloum, and before we went there, no white man had ever been there, at least one white man, a fellow called Rolf, who was a German. I think he'd been there about 20 years before. But what happened to him, I don't know. Alexander the Great went there, supposed to have gone there in whenever he was in power. He took an army there, I believe. But otherwise, no white man had ever been there. They'd never seen one. And whilst we were in Siwa, we never saw this female there at all. They all hid themselves.
on these patrols, what was the kind of size of your outfit?
Oh, we'd go out with four Ford cars, armed with Lewis guns, and about three personnel in each car. We'd go out for a week, patrolling, looking for camel tracks that might have passed through, and we always self-contained for a week.
And who would be the officer in charge? Would you be in charge of this?
I might be in charge, or the two of us. Sometimes the two of us went out, sometimes just one of us.
And how would you sort of move along? Would you be all in a line, or?
Oh, it depended on the ground entirely. If it was a nice flat ground, we'd go out in line because we better chance of picking up the tracks. But if it was a tall, stony, or undulating ground, we very often go line ahead. Well, some of the portions in the south were very rocky indeed, and you had to manhandle the vehicles or almost carry them over some of the bits to get onto your patrol.
How about, you mentioned the stony sort of terrain. Did this cause problems for tyres and things?
Oh, frightful. Oh, yes. In one case, I remember, to illustrate it, between Saloum and Sidi Omar, which was quite a well-known landmark in this present war, we had 20 punctures on one vehicle. But one was used to that, and we just sat down, repaired them, and went on. A lot of the desert was very flint, covered in very sharp flint, and that just drilled holes through the tyres. And tyres in those days were remarkably small compared to the ones now.
You say you repaired them. How would you go about that then?
Well, just took the tube out and repair the puncture. And you very often have to put a lining on the tyre itself if it was cut. We had all that laid out. And in those days, if you got into soft sand, you would get the tyre creeping. And it would creep around and pull out the valve and destroy the tube entirely.
That was a common occurrence, was it?
Oh, yeah, it's quite common, yeah. We used to have, I've forgotten what they're called now, but they were kind of stops on the tyres to try and prevent them creeping. Otherwise they would creep around and just pull the valve out, and that was that.
In soft sand, how did the cars handle?
You had to get into the knack of driving through soft sand. It was just a knack of driving. I mean, if you're driving through soft sand or anything like that, I mean, it was fatal to try and steer. You just merely kept the thing straight ahead. If you start to steer at all, you go base over apex or stall.
Did you actually drive yourself?
Well, very often, yeah. We take it in turns.
With the other ranks in the car?
Yeah.
Were you interchangeable? Could everybody do everything?
No. We had our drivers, and we were organized in this way. The gunners were machine gun corps, and the drivers were RASC, or ASC as they were in those days. So there are two different corps mixed up, do you see? And the drivers, we didn't train the drivers in the gunnery side at all.
They came to you ready trained?
Oh, yes, they were ready trained, yeah.
And did that work out okay, did it?
Oh, yeah, very well. Yeah, very well. Except we used to occasionally, one or two of the people, in those days, the Armoured Service Corps were non-combatants, yeah. And when we got to get into a bit of trouble, one or two used to say if they hadn't joined the ASC to fight, they were non-combatants, you know. However, that didn't wear along.
You just had to sort of go ahead and... You'd have to sort of make them go ahead, did you?
Oh, yes, yeah. No trouble like that.
When you went off for a week like that, what about petrol and water?
Well, we carried everything complete. It was all complete. The whole vehicle was set up for that purpose. For instance, the axle radiators on the top and the running boards, instead of being just a bit of tin and running board and so on, were water tanks. Well, they're all properly arranged in that way. Proper place for machine gun and everything. Complete.
Did you lose much petrol on a trip like that?
Well, you lose a certain amount because we had these four-gallon tins, which were very flimsy affairs and so on. And if you weren't careful, you got a good deal of leakage in that way. But one jolly well should make sure that you didn't get it. Otherwise, you watch these things and so on. Otherwise, you'd get stranded, you'd get lost. We had a golden rule that if we felt we were lost, we stood still. Stop where we were, and then people would realize we were lost and come out and look for us. They knew roughly where we went, where we were going, and they would follow the tracks of the cars. You could tell a new track from an old track quite easily. You could tell whether it's a week old or a fortnight old after a little practice.
What sort of radio did you have? Did you have any at all?
Any what?
Any communication, radio?
No, not at all. Pigeon, occasionally. The pigeons were very unreliable because they wouldn't go more than about 40 or 50 miles. And they were a nuisance too because they took up such a lot of room.
But they were a regular thing you took along with you, were they?
Not always. I wouldn't say it's regular. It depends on the load we got, you see.
Did you ever get lost at all on these things?
I personally didn't get lost, but two or three people got lost. But we never had any casualties in that way. Because we knew roughly where they were, and we knew roughly that we pick up their tracks, and we could tell their tracks straight away where they were from other tracks.
What were the two, or what was the main equipment you had?
The Lewis gun.
The actual vehicle themselves?
Ford, T-model Fords.
You didn't have any Rolls-Royce?
Not on these patrols, no. The Rolls-Royce remained at Saloum or down at Siwa as a kind of backing for this force in case one got into serious trouble.
And had they been, were they just a civilian type of Model T?
What?
These Fords.
The Fords, they were exactly similar. They were civilian type. They were just civilian cars, except that the bodies were stripped and we put our own special bodies on. You just turn the two of the body away and you put your own special body on.
What did that consist of?
Well, it consisted of just a bit of, as I've said, the running boards were consisted of what we call fantasies, which carried about 20 gallons of water each. I've forgotten how many gallons I carry, and bits of tin and bits of wood knocked on where we thought it was necessary, that's all. But there were really nothing else but the chassis, and built up on the chassis for our own purpose. All open, no windscreen or anything like that.
They didn't have any special armour at all, did they?
Oh, no, at all, no.
Did you work with Rolls-Royce as well at some stage?
Yes, that was after the war. I went to Rolls-Royce in Derby.
What I meant was, did you work out there in Rolls-Royce cars?
Oh, yes, I was. I commanded the 11th LAMB at the end of the war in Palestine. Light armoured motor battery, they called.
How would you say that they compared, the Rolls-Royce compared in desert conditions with the Fords?
Well, there's no comparison because, you see, the Ford motor car was so light you could pick it up. The four of us, we could pick the thing up out of the ditch and move it somewhere else, but you can't do that with a Rolls-Royce with heavy armour on it. Paid 2.5 tons, I think. There's no comparison. You can't even start comparing them. Because, if they got into soft sand, they hadn't got much hope of moving. No, I don't think that there's any comparison at all, really. One was supplementary to the other, as it amounted to, really.
Did you have out there any workshop facilities?
Well, we did all our own workshop facilities, the Fords did, but the armored cars had special workshops for that business. We did all our own repairs.
Would you say that as a result of your experience out there, you'd become fully sort of mechanical by the time you'd finished?
No, I mean, we are completely specialists in what I call the T Model Ford. Anything to do with that, we could pull it to bits and put it together again quite happily. I mean, I've seen once or twice when we're in trouble. It's a place called Beirut. We arrived there with a broken frame from one of the Ford cars, and we found an old frame in Beirut, and 2.5 hours later we changed the frame and we were on the road again. Well, everybody knew exactly what to do. The whole lot were trained. There was no difficulty at all about it.
But what about in Rolls-Royces? Could you do the same in that?
No. In fact, Rolls-Royces never gave you any trouble. The only trouble you get would be a bearing in the wheel or something like that, a wheel bearing, or a sooty plug. But otherwise, we never had any trouble. Anyway, there were the workshops there to look after those. There's no trouble at all.
One last question on that section. Was the Duke of Westminster himself out there?
He was out there in 1915. He left the beginning of 16, or about the middle of 16, I think he left. I think he went as ambassador to Spain, I think. Or it might have been military attaché to Spain, I'm not quite sure what he went to do. But you see, all his armored cars, he got exactly what he wanted, and if he couldn't get it through the military, he just buy it himself. We got a Rolls-Royce ambulance, which he purchased for us, because the government wouldn't give us one. And so he said we must have a proper Rolls-Royce ambulance, which he got for us.
When would that be? About 1916, 17, was it?
Yes, 16. Yeah. I think it was about 10 years.
Well, how would he sort of be involved in that? He was still actually out in Syria, was he, and Egypt?
He was on the Western Desert of Egypt. I don't know. He had all his friends in Cairo. Everybody knew him, and life in those days was very different to what they are now, you know. And you got such a lot more done on the old boy net. He got this ambulance for as an example, sent out from England. Well, you can't imagine anybody getting anything sent out from England in the last war, anyway, if you wanted it or not.
What sort of history did the Light Armoured Car Brigade have overall?
The Light Armoured Car Brigade, they were originally organised into a Royal Naval Squadron in Belgium at the beginning of the war. They went to Antwerp, and Westminster was with them there, and did, I imagine, a good deal of very useful work. And then when the line became stabilized, which was, I suppose it was about October 1914. There was no further use for the armored cars there because they couldn't get across country. So he looked for fresh pastures to operate on. He took them all out, Royal Naval Armored Car Squadron, out to Egypt, and they were employed on the Western Desert.